is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. It can be easy to take the Postal Service for granted. They come in the rain, the snow, the sleet, and they're reasonably priced. But the USPS has been struggling financially for years, losing more than $8 billion in 2019. And recently, their challenges have only been growing. President Trump is a vocal critic. They're essential workers in a pandemic, and the new Postmaster General has put a policy in place that some says slows down the mail. More Americans than ever are expected to use the mail to cast this ballot in November. Is the U.S. Postal Service equipped to handle mail-in voting on a massive scale in just a matter of months? Here to talk about it, we have Nicole Goodkind. She's a politics reporter with Fortune magazine. Welcome to 1A, Nicole.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Mark Demenstein, president of the American Postal Workers Union. Thanks for being here, Mark.
Thanks for having me, and it's a pleasure to be here.
And we should note, we also asked the U.S. Postal Service to participate. They declined, but sent a statement, which we'll read part of later. Nicole, it may be surprising to some that the U.S. Postal Service is not tax-funded. Why is that?
Yeah, I mean, this is an institution that makes all of its money off of the selling of postage stamps and its own sales. So there is no tax funding. There hasn't been since the 70s when that was instituted. I think that there's this common misconception that this is this agency that's being bailed out, constantly by the government. And I do think that there are some politicians that would kind of want to propagate that idea, but it's actually not true. It's entirely self-funded, and that is highly problematic. That's kind of what's led to these issues.
Can you explain a little bit more about how the Postal Service operates and how we got to where it is today?
Yeah, so, you know, there's no way around it. The USPS has kind of been on this unsustainable path and has been largely since 2006. And that's when a law was passed by Congress that required the Postal Service to pre-fund its retirement benefits for 75 years into the future. So any employee that comes on to the USPS now must be funded, for 75 years. That's a huge burden that a lot of other agencies, no other agency has, and that has kind of accounted for 80% of the losses that the agency's seen since then. Because of that and also the diminishing, use of mail and email, there have been a lot of issues and burdens. The way that the USPS works is it's this essential service, this agency, but it is largely controlled by Congress. So even though they don't depend on tax money and that, they make their own revenue, Congress gets to decide how much money they can charge, which also kind of hurts them. It makes it so that they can't increase prices if they're facing this economic emergency.
Well, Lee emailed us, "I've been caring with the post office for nearly 10 years, and what I am seeing now concerns many of us. First class letters are already slowing down at a troublesome rate. Postmaster DeJoy has come out of the starting blocks, ready to shake the USPS at its foundation. His words sound like he's concerned about saving money, but his actions so far show that he is willing to compromise the quality of service and efficiency at the USPS." Thanks for sharing your experience with us, Lee. Mark, I mean, let's talk more about what you're hearing from workers at the Postal Service. What are they saying?
Well, Jen, look, postal workers are an extremely dedicated group of employees to the mission that's discussed in the Postal Reorganization Act of 1970, to bind the country together, bind the nation together, and to provide prompt, reliable, and efficient services. Those are the actual words. So workers are very upset about the idea of delaying mail, slowing down mail. Our approach is to treat the mail as if it's our own, treat it and get it to the customer as promptly and as reliably as possible. And anything that's counter to that runs counter to our very DNA. The last Pew Research poll, and they run a poll every year about the public's view of government agencies and services. The post office always rates the highest. And this year it's the highest ever, and we think that's an appreciation, a deeper appreciation based on the role of postal workers and the trust that people have in postal workers and the Postal Service during this pandemic. 91%, and it didn't matter if one was identified as a Republican, a Democrat, an independent, rural or urban, it's across the board. So the people definitely need the Postal Service, see it as part of the civic life of the country, part of their future. We all use it differently, but we all need it.
Nicole, let's talk a little bit more about the money. In April, the Postal Service told Congress that it would soon be out of money and asked for $75 billion. What happened with that?
Yeah, so there was some bipartisan consensus on that. It seemed like, you know, there were Republicans in the Senate who supported the deal, but the Trump administration said that they would veto any bill that supported the USPS in that way. So they wanted $20 billion to kind of keep them afloat, $25 billion, and then another $25 billion to update their technology, which is incredibly important considering we have this vote-by-mail election coming up. And, you know, technology is important for ballot tracking, barcode tracking, and so on and so forth. What we did see was that there was an allowance of a $10 billion loan from the Treasury Department. And this is something that has to be paid back. It's on top of $15 billion that was lent out quite a bit of time ago. The USPS hasn't said they're going to take that money yet, but it seems like they're in negotiations. The issue with that is, as I said previously, the Treasury Department has come out and said they wanted to privatize the USPS, right? They've made these recommendations. They're clearly not in favor. This particular Treasury Department is not in favor of the USPS working as it stands publicly as this service organization. And so they kind of get to make these negotiations and these demands in order to give this loan. And so we're not sure what the demands will actually be. They're still being negotiated. But, you know, we're hearing things like Secretary Mnuchin might be able to pick who the next Postmaster General is himself, instead of allowing the Board of Governors, which are appointed by President Trump to begin with, to elect this person. There are some terms that come with the deal that could actually diminish the USPS as we know it right now.
Well, as we said, President Trump has criticized the Postal Service for its financial situation. Here he is speaking to reporters in April.
The Postal Service is a joke because they're handing out packages for Amazon and other internet companies, and every time they bring a package, they lose money on it. So Amazon and other internet companies and delivery companies are dropping all of their, not all of them, but a big portion of packages and whatever else they're doing into a post office. And the post office is supposed to deliver the packages, and they lose a lot of money. The post office should raise the price of a package by approximately four times because they don't raise them. For some reason, these people have been in there a long time, but for some reason, they're very cozy with some of these companies.
Mark, what's your response to the president's comments there?
Well, one is I think it's an absolute insult to every dedicated postal worker, 600,000 plus of us. And I think it's an insult to the people of this country, the 91% that have a high, favorable, trusting view of this wonderful institution. And the idea of a president dictate all the independent agencies, the Postal Regulatory Commission oversees the pricing issues. All the independent audits say that the post office makes money on packages. Now, the union is not directly involved with that. They're on the competitive side of the pricing. But packages are largely the future of the Postal Service. That's what's helping keep the post office going for all of us. We go to 160 million addresses a day, a million new addresses every year. Post offices in 30,000 plus neighborhoods and communities. It's really a system that works. And to say Jen.
Let me just have you pause right there because we have to take a quick break and we'll be back. When we come back, is the U.S. Postal Service ready to take on mail-in voting come November? We're speaking with Mark Dimenstein, president of the American Postal Workers Union, and Nicole Goodkind, politics reporter at Fortune Magazine. We heard from Kathy in Cary, North Carolina, who says, Trump's calculated threat to defund the USPS added to their historic financial troubles. This means to me that they will not be able to handle the huge increase in mail, especially since they're now also delivering packages for Amazon and others. This election is too vital to risk having my vote not be counted. I am 72, but I'm planning to vote in person. I'm Jen White. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp, a truly affordable online counseling service. Fill out a questionnaire online and get matched with a licensed counselor best suited to your mental health needs. Whether it's depression, anxiety, or trauma, BetterHelp will help you overcome what stands in the way of your happiness. Learn more at BetterHelp.com and get 10% off your first month with promo code 1A. BetterHelp. Get help anytime, anywhere.
Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or maybe perfect strangers? You can get all the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle on the 1A News Roundup. Find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
How do you maintain a friendship in the middle of a pandemic?
Including our last restaurant meal. My last restaurant meal was with you. I love that.
Wow.
Aminatou Sow and Ann Friedman gave me some friend pointers. They host a podcast called Call Your Girlfriend, and they wrote a book all about friendship. Listen and subscribe now to It's Been a Minute from NPR.
I'm Jen White. More Americans than ever will use the Postal Service to cast their ballot this year, and some states are scrambling to put mail-in voting in place. But five states had already moved to mail-in voting even before the pandemic: Colorado, Hawaii, Oregon, Utah, and Washington. Joining us now is the Republican Secretary of State for Washington, Kim Wyman. Secretary Wyman, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me on.
And also with us is Nicole Goodkind, politics reporter with Fortune magazine, and Mark Demenstein, president of the American Postal Workers Union. So, Secretary, you've been voting by mail for years now. Can you talk about that transition and the structures you put in place to make it happen?
Oh, absolutely. We began moving to vote by mail in the mid-90s when any voter could choose to be an absentee voter. And by our 2004 governor's race, which was the closest in the country's history, we realized that you couldn't effectively do a poll site and poll vote by mail election well. And we started switching in 2005 to 2011 to complete vote by mail. And in that time, we worked very closely with our postal partners to, you know, redesign mail pieces, to try to get the lowest rates on our mail out and the best service possible. And so, you know, through those years, we've also been able to build out our infrastructure in our election facilities to be able to be very efficient and effective in our processing of ballots.
How much did you, or do you even going forward, have to rethink your timelines and deadlines to make sure the USPS can handle votes properly?
Oh, quite a bit, actually. In fact, we had to move our primary election back from September to August, really to just put into place the mailing timelines that we needed to make sure our voters got ballots in time.
Now, President Trump has expressed his concerns over fraud when it comes to mail-in voting, and so have other Republicans. As someone with a lot of mail-in voting experience, have you seen any fraud?
We have. Washington's experience has been a very low level of fraud. In 2018, we did compare our voter history to other states, and we did find in our state 142 cases of what looks like people either voted twice or voted on behalf of a deceased family member. And I give you the context of that 142 out of 3.2 million ballots cast. So, does it happen? Yes. Is it rampant? No.
Well, we asked for listeners who are postal workers to call in, and you did.
Our new Postmaster General has no idea what the post office is about. He doesn't understand the work on our level. He understands big numbers for corporations and things like that, and it's just not working.
We've been here since day one of this pandemic, and I don't think anyone seems to care. They just take us for granted.
We are overcrowded with mail. They are telling us to let the mail go ahead and be late. No more overtime, no more staying past the time you're supposed to stay. But what they're really doing is making sure that we don't get this mail out on time.
Thanks for sharing your stories with us. Hear a lot of frustration there, Nicole, over some recent changes, including the new Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy. Can you tell us a little bit more about him and the changes we've seen under his administration?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is a man who has contributed largely to the Republican Party, including over $1 million to the Trump administration. He worked in private enterprise before this and logistics, so he does have some experience,
you know, with getting things out, but he has no experience working with the USPS before this. And people do believe that it is a political appointment. He's been, you know, in office or in the role of Postmaster General for just about a month at this point, and he's already quietly making these changes. And I don't know, there's probably a bit of a violation of status quo, so there might be something going on with the union there too, but there have been these kind of quiet memos that are going out and talks with people, especially in urban areas, you know, city carriers, ending overtime, you know, stopping second trips, meaning, you know, if there are too many packages or too much mail to be delivered, the postmen and women can't actually go back and deliver it that day. They have to wait, which people worry is going to cause this snowball effect. You have to realize that right now, I think you mentioned this before, postal workers are essential workers. They've been really, really impacted by the coronavirus. Depending on who you ask, between 5,000 and 9,000 people have tested positive. There have been many deaths. I think the number I heard is 40,000 people have had to, who work for the Postal Service, have had to quarantine, and that means taking 2 weeks away from work. So overtime has become really essential to get all this mail out. You know, you combine that with it's basically being Christmas season constantly for you know, the Postal Service, because people are delivering and getting things ordered to their house more since they're sheltering in place. I think the data I saw said that 20% of all work is done in overtime now. So to eliminate that is pretty serious. And I think it's concerning to a lot of people as well, because this is supposed to be a revenue increase. But what we've seen in the past, when you look back to, you know, 2011, the USPS announced like about $3 billion in service cuts that slowed their first-class mail delivery, and it actually ended the fiscal year with a record net loss of $15.9 billion, and that was compared to a net loss of $5.1 billion the year before. So it hasn't worked in the past. And then when you just think about this in terms of having to gear up for what is likely one of the, you know, most difficult elections for the USPS, you know, to date, it seems like we're headed for some sort of issue, especially considering that the USPS hasn't even hit its own goals for on-time delivery of any type of first-class mail in 5 years. And that's exactly the kind of mail that absentee ballots will be sent through.
Secretary Wyman, as you prepare for the November election, how concerned are you by this mail slowdown?
Oh, we're very concerned. Election officials across the country are working really hard to have contingency plans, but it's not easy. I've been on a few calls with the president, and not the president, President Demonstein, and you know, heard him talk about the fact that they deliver to every household in the country in a way that our private carriers don't. So we have contingency plans, but I think election officials are very concerned if the post office is reducing service that we'll be able to get ballots to people in time.
I want to get a little more context around the financial situation. We heard from Brian, who emails, are not most of the post office's financial problems caused by the forward funding of retirement accounts? Congress can fix this at any time. Your thoughts about that, Mark? Is that the main issue you're facing right now?
Yeah, well, yes and no, Jen. The 2006 law, the Postal Accountability Enhancement Act that Nicole mentioned, set into motion a congressionally manufactured crisis in the post office. No other entity, government, private business, had to pre-fund retiree health care benefits 75 years into the future. That was for people that not only didn't work yet at the post office, in some cases for people that weren't even born yet. And the post office was successfully paying as they go those benefits. That drained $5.5 billion a year out of the post office. But what's happened now is a different crisis. There's a direct COVID economic impact. We all know what a deep economic crisis it's causing throughout the world, throughout our country, 45 million suddenly unemployed. It has deeply affected mail because of the impact on business, on retail. Certainly advertising mail has dropped off, first-class mail, almost 30%. Now, temporarily, packages have made up the difference in revenue. My wife and I live three blocks from a drugstore and a block and a half from a hardware store. And for months, we ordered online what we would normally just walk into the store and get. Now we're walking into the store and getting it. So that increase, that holiday season, is not going to last. So the Postal Service itself has projected a $50 billion COVID-related loss, COVID revenue loss over the next 10 years. And that's where the ask now before Congress of actually appropriated relief to get the Postal Service through this emergency. There was plenty of relief for the private sector, $500 billion in the CARES Act at the end of March. This is the public sector, the public commons that belongs to all of us. And so there is an ask on the House Heroes Act for $25 billion. It's now in the hands of the Senate. I think that Nicole previously talked about the loan authority in the CARES Act. The Post Office doesn't need more debt. The Post Office needs relief. And if we get that relief, and we should get it if our elected officials are listening to the constituents and their desires and needs, then the Post Office is in a much stronger position. There's much less financial pressure to slow things down, to cut back. We don't care as a union how the hours get worked, whether it's through overtime, whether it's through hiring more workers, whether it's with both, but we definitely demand and are on the side of the people demanding service prompt, reliable, and efficient services.
You mentioned the HEROES Act. Just want to mention there, that's the House Democrats' coronavirus relief proposal. We asked the USPS to join our conversation, and they declined, but they did send a statement. They said, quote, "The Postal Service's financial condition is not going to impact our ability to process and deliver election and political mail. The Postal Service has ample capacity to adjust our nationwide processing and delivery network to meet projected election and political mail volume, including any additional volume that may result as a response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Our network is designed to handle increases in volume and deliver that mail in a timely manner," unquote. We'll have more from our guests and from you in a moment. This is 1A from WAMU and NPR.
Until recently, Edmund Hong says he didn't speak out against racism because he was scared.
My parents told me not to speak up because they were scared. But I'm tired of this.
Listen now on the Code Switch podcast from NPR.
We're talking about the beleaguered U.S. Postal Service as more Americans than ever are expected to vote by mail this November. We have Washington's Secretary of State, Kim Wyman, Nicole Goodkind, politics reporter with Fortune magazine, and also with us, Mark Demenstein, president of the American Postal Workers Union. Well, Secretary Wyman, it took Washington State years to get where you are now with mail-in voting. Do other states have a chance of getting this right in a matter of months?
You know, we don't have another option. They have to. And we know that at least, 15% of our population is over 65 across the country. These are people that are at high risk, not even including people that have health issues that will keep them from going to a polling place or a voting center. So we have to have an option where voters can vote at home. And that's what states are really focusing on. And I think you're going to see a hybrid of vote by mail and vote at home voting in every state, including mine. Probably 1-2% of our voters will go into a vote center to cast a ballot or do curbside service because they don't want to put themselves at risk but need to vote on a device or maybe need to get a replacement ballot. So every state is wrestling with coronavirus and how we're going to respond, and I know that my colleagues are working very hard to make sure that that's a safe experience regardless of where you vote.
Talk about the importance of voter education around mail-in voting and how you communicate with people and help them understand the specific deadlines and timelines that are attached to mail-in voting.
Well, one of the advantages that we have being a completely vote-by-mail state is we have universal messaging that we can do statewide. And one of the things we found before we moved to vote-by-mail universally is that you had some pockets where you had one set of messages, go to the polling place, go to a vote center, and everybody else, you know, make sure your ballot's postmarked by election day or get it in a drop box. So I think from a messaging standpoint, our state is much more able to be very consistent in our messaging across the state. And we have a big state geographically, so it's important. And I think that's going to be another challenge that states have of how do you get that messaging out in this changed environment.
Mark, what do you think voters need to know about mail-in voting in order to make sure their vote is counted this election?
Well, I think that we should look at the facts and we should look at history. Number one, The Postal Service has been doing vote by mail for generations. Our military personnel overseas and their families, 5 states, including the state of Washington that Secretary Wyman heads up now on the voting side. Oregon has had it for 19 years. A state like California, which by itself, if it was a country, would be the 8th largest economy of the world. Half the people voluntarily vote by mail or vote at home. You get it in the mail, you fill out your ballot, and you may bring it somewhere, but it's either vote by mail or vote at home. So we're very proud as postal workers, and the post office, if it has the support it needs, if it gets the COVID relief that's before Congress. Now, as I said, in the CARES stimulus package at the end of March, the corporations got $500 billion of that huge stimulus package. The post office needs the relief, and if the post office gets the support to be the post office, there's no problems from the postal worker point of view. We're dedicated. We're proud of what we do. There's sanctity of the mail. We have an oath of office. It's private, and it's fully trusted. And I think it's important with this conversation to look at the difference between what the states need to do and those new challenges that the pandemic has put forward that the two other guests spoke to so well, and what the post office will do. If it's not to the post, there were problems in Wisconsin that came to light, and they found, and the post office got a lot of criticism in the press. And then they found out that it was the state that actually didn't get the ballots mailed on time, and they never got to the post office to be able to be delivered. The post office has been delivering for the people of this country for generations and generations, and we can continue to deliver well as long as we have the support. And I always look at Oregon. 19 years at every level of government, all vote by mail, over 100 million ballots cast, 15 cases of, quote, voter fraud. That's less than one per year. So let's look at the fact rather than the rhetoric. And the civic role, the post office plays a key civic role in our society. And what better way for that civic role to be expressed than making sure that people have access to the ballot box, our cherished and hard-fought right to vote. Not who we're voting for when we vote, not what issues we're voting on, but that access to the ballot box. And we're here to serve, and postal workers are proud to move people's ballots. And if we have the support, we'll move them there on time.
Well, we got this email from Jeff who says, I've lived at my house in the country in northern Indiana for just over 10 years. I'm now going on day 3 with no mail delivery or pickup. The delays you are talking about are happening now. We must protect the USPS. Nicole, when you look at some of the most recent changes by the Postmaster General, what seems to be working most towards this delay that we're seeing in mail delivery? Is it the overtime, or are there other things at work?
Yeah, absolutely. I wrote a story on this recently, and actually the comments were full of people saying the exact same thing, which was really interesting to me that these delays had been felt recently and strongly. So there is the overtime aspect where now 20% of, you know, the time spent delivering mail is gone. But there are also other problems. There's you know, post delivery people used to do 2 trips a day if they couldn't deliver both trips. And now they're being told in memos to just leave things for the next day or let them pile up. One memo actually said, listen, expect to see mail left on the floor. It's going to disturb you, but hopefully it will get better. There's this other idea of not doing 2 trips with trucks. So each mail truck can only carry so many packages. If the packages don't fit on it, the you know, postal service workers will go back and do another trip. They're being told not to do that. This is mail and packages now. And so things just get left behind. And, you know, you can imagine what gets left behind for a day, then snowballs into another day, and then maybe a week, and things just really get backed up there. And I think this is really important to know when people are voting by mail, you know, their ballots, and I think the stat is in 35 states, ballots must be received by Election Day, which is November 3rd. So people might assume that they can mail in their ballots 2 or 3 days ahead of time because that's what they're used to and that their votes will be counted, but that's not quite the case. The USPS is now saying that they should absolutely send their ballots in at least 1 week before Election Day. And I think that needs to be, you know, a message that's kind of widely shouted to people so that their votes are counted.
We had one caller leave a question specifically for you, Secretary Wyman.
Hi, this is Wendy Fields from the Democracy Initiative. It's great to hear Kim Wyman, a Republican Secretary of State from Washington, to talk about how we can expand participation with voting by mail. Other states look to Washington as a model, and access to the ballot should not be a partisan issue. Unfortunately, it has become partisan in Congress. So my question is, are you reaching out to Senator McConnell or other Republican senators to advocate for funding for the post office and for state and local elections so you and other states can operate safely in November?
Well, Secretary Wyman, as a Republican leading the way, have you spoken with any Republican senators about Postal Service funding?
Actually, I was just part of a letter with a number of my Secretary of State colleagues asking Congress to do exactly that. And I think the challenge has been for many of my Republican colleagues that are Secretaries of State is, you know, that they don't want strings attached to the funding request. And that kind of is a stopping point. Many states believe that they can answer the questions best and that they know how to run elections best in their states. And it is a state responsibility. So I think that that's been part of the challenge, but at the same time, many states are cash-strapped and need funding immediately to be able to pull off this election well, and so that's why I joined my colleagues from across the country to ask the Senate to do exactly that.
Well, we had another listener call in from your home state talking about their experience voting in Washington.
Hi, this is Randy from Bellingham, Washington. We've had mail-in ballots for quite a few years here in Washington State, and I would say the post office is important but not critical for mail-in ballots because we have drop boxes all over the place where people can simply drive up and drop off their ballot from their car.
I mean, Secretary Wyman, as an elections official, would it be possible to conduct a vote-by-mail election without the USPS?
It would be very difficult to do it, but we certainly have plans in place in case there's some lack of funding and worst case, the Postal Service shuts down. We have contingency plans, but believe me, the USPS is a critical element of our mail ballot delivery and return. Even with the 500 drop boxes that the caller mentioned that we have here in Washington State, what we've seen since we moved to prepaid postage is that 60% of our ballots are being returned by mail through the USPS, and 40% are being returned in our ballot drop boxes. And this is a complete flip from 2 years ago when those stats were the exact opposite.
Well, as we wrap up here, Nicole, as you're watching what's going to happen between now and November with so many states scrambling to get some mail-in voting processes in place, what are you keeping close watch on?
Yeah, I'm looking in particular at the 8 states that have no absentee or mail-in vote process right now, and I'm wondering what's going to happen there. And these aren't just, you know, Republican or Democratic states. So it's a big mix, including my home state of New York. I think it's very late to get something on the table, and I worry about that. I do also just want to point out one thing about these mail-in or these drop boxes. We have to realize that a lot of people, you know, there is universal vote by mail, and that's something that's going to be expanded, but a lot of people do actually send absentee ballots from other states, or, you know, our military abroad have used this for a very long time to vote. And so the USPS is going to remain essential regardless of whether or not these boxes exist. But I think that another thing that we really need to be prepared for is just a different kind of election day. I think on November 3rd, people are expecting to stay up late and get their results as they have, you know, for years in the past. And that might not be what happens.
We're going to have to leave it there. Yeah. That's Nicole Goodkind, politics reporter with Fortune Magazine, Kim Wyman, Secretary of State in Washington State, and Mark Demenstein, president of the American Postal Workers Union. Thanks to you all for joining us. Remember, we're on Instagram. Follow us at The 1A Show. This conversation was produced by Michelle Harbin and edited by Matthew Simonson. To learn more about them and the rest of the team, visit the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks so much for listening, and let's talk again tomorrow. This is 1A.